and welcome to Focus on Business. I'm your host, Lee Strickland. Today's guest is Chris Wimberly of Night Sounds and Megan Purrier, I got that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Of Night Sound Studio, located here in Carrboro, North Carolina. Chris is the owner, producer, engineer for Night Sounds, and Megan is...
I am the studio manager and the chief engineer.
Ah, so we've got two experts in here that are going to help us understand Night Sound Studio's one-of-a-kind recording studio, their production facilities that are dedicated to giving every product its own great sound affordably and with the best people and gear to make that possible. I am anxious to talk to you about everything recording. And they combine what they say is art, science, and heart to make our recordings the best they can be. So, guys, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having us.
How did you start Night Sound Studios and what motivated you?
Well, it was actually 15 years ago. So the studio has been around as far as studio age goes. It's, you know, it's an older dog. And it's been a really changing business model over the years, just because since I started it, recording studios have changed entirely.
Right.
The reason why people would need a recording studio has changed. The stories that people tell about recording studios change, you know.
The technology.
The technology has changed a whole lot. It's a whole lot more democratized now. And for some people, they think, oh, well, home recording makes recording studios obsolete, but
I can vouch that it doesn't. The acoustics are different.
Well, over the years, yeah, that it became really obvious to me that, I mean, it wouldn't have been around for 15 years if everybody just thought, I can do this myself. But there is a lot of stuff that people can do themselves, and that's part of that democratization that I mentioned. And it's a really easy thing to say, oh, I'm going to buy a lot of gear and do this, and then you realize objectivity is what's missing, or, you know, somebody having the right tool, and you bought a wrench when you needed a screwdriver,
or using it the right way, because it's like I've been trying to do videos and, mm-hmm. and podcasting and all that stuff, and just how high is your ceiling, mm-hmm. right? Or, you know, walk-in closets can have high ceilings too, and a lot of people use their closet, mm-hmm. or, you know, I said I'm going to go sit in my car and record because I know the acoustics is probably better in the car than anywhere else.
Or is there a refrigerator in the background and those kinds of things?
Or how much? Yeah, I've noticed with how many devices are in there, right? So the printer buzz, the yep. server hum, mm-hmm. you know, and the notices coming in on your computer from your email that you can't for some reason get turned off. I mean, there are just so many things that are in a home that you don't think about.
AC and all that stuff.
Well, I realized that to know what kind of recording studio I was going to need to run, I'd have to try to figure out what kind of recording studio people were going to need in two
right.
or 3 years.
And that stay is ahead of so the curve. Key. And I don't think everybody does that.
Well, yeah, because it's such a changing industry and people weren't going to studios for the same reasons. A lot of my mentors and a lot of people that I worked with when I was just an intern, they were trying to make the same things work for different people.
Right.
And I kept a little notebook and I scribbled down in it about, you know, well, someday I'm going to need to do this, or I don't ever want to get to be this age and not be that adaptable.
Well, yeah, it's like we learn. I remember I couldn't imagine when I was in the corporate world why somebody would be happy sitting in their cubicle. I still can't understand that, but I do some days when I'm tired think, I wish I could just be that person that was happy sitting in the cubicle.
Well, we're lucky to be the people that don't have to sit in cubicles. I think
agree.
That our job is the opposite of that.
Yeah. Well, so you have the creativity, you have the technology, but let's take the spectrum, because our listeners, our audience is probably that spectrum. They're probably the garage band. Mm-hmm. They're probably that solo musician. They're a podcaster. They're
right.
a business person. So let's kind of cover the gamut, because I know I get those catalogs of equipment, and then here's the podcasting package. And I'm thinking, but I have a Yeti microphone for my PC. I have an Apogee microphone
right.
for my Mac. Are they the right things? Are they good enough? Is that why I have issues with the sound and stuff when I'm recording? Or do I need a board like sitting in front of me to do this show?
Mm-hmm.
How do you know and help them diagnose what somebody needs for what they want to do?
Well, that's an awesome question. And every single project we do, be it music or podcasting or voiceovers for a website or, you know, editing a podcast, there's just a lot of different applications for audio these days not just music. And every single project is so different that we have to sit down with somebody face to face, or we can Skype with them. And we talk with them about what it is they're trying to do. And we just find out about the particulars about their project, their reasons for doing it. It could be something that they just want to put in a shoebox and show to their grandkids.
Right.
Or it could be something that they want a million people to hear. And finding out the reasons why somebody wants to do something and figuring out what the means are that they have to do it, and then helping them do it within those means, is really how we take each consultation. And we do free consultations, free tours of the studio, and we just have to spend one-on-one time with people and figure out what it is that they need and who they are.
And a lot of times we'll talk to people about like what they have at home and what they're using and what maybe they need to do at home and what they can get high quality from at home and what stuff is better to maybe come in and do at the studio because we have a better space or we have the right kind of gear or something like that. But we'll walk people through like what is the best part to do on their own to save time and money on that stuff.
That's right, because even though, you know, home recording has been a thing for, you know, way over a decade now, so it's no new thing. But we found that if we can, what Megan's saying is exactly true. We have to work with people's strengths,
right,
and their means. And, you know, we're not going to be a facility or audio professionals that say, oh, yeah, well, you could do that on your own, but you ought to let me do that. You know, we are more often going to say, here's what you can do, and here's what we can do to fill in the gaps.
Well, and you look at it, because I even listen to national radio shows, and it drives me crazy, because I'll listen to their podcast. I can't always tune in when they're on the air. And the volume changes so much, even on those shows, because mm-hmm. it's like somebody calls in via Skype or something, and they sound like they're whispering, or they're breaking up, or whatever, and right. you're trying to adjust the volume, but... You know, the person that's in the studio then ends up at 3,000 decibels, right? And you still can't hear mm-hmm. the call-in person. And so that's always a concern when I'm doing mm-hmm. a Skype call, for instance.
Right.
How do I record that so that we both sound well? You know, we come across in those podcasting and those types of things.
Well, you've hit on something rather important, which is that throughout the history of audio, these different mediums have their limitations, and you can have the best recorder in the world. You can have the best microphones, the best preamps, the best compressors. But then when you go to a Skype call and Skype sounds terrible.
Yeah. It's only as good as the Skype connection yeah. or your voice over IP phone number or their cell phone, whatever using, right?
It should be a comfort to everyone that say an interview on NPR using Skype will sound terrible. I mean, you know that you're doing okay if you're having the same problem, because that's certainly something that as the years go by, Skype gets a little
We're all
better.
Equally bad.
When it comes to Skype, when it comes to like, you know, video conferencing, I think some things are better than others. But of course, you know, I can't imagine NPR not using cell phone apps.
Right.
In these situations. And that might be part of it. It might be the network that they're on. So.
Well, and you're just sitting there and you're trying to do it. So like we've had call-in issues with our lines here on the station because things are getting upgraded. And sometimes it's right when your show goes on air, somebody decides to work on the line. So your call-in guest can't call in, right?
Right.
And so you have to, how do you work around that? So it's like pre-record all your call-in guests for the next couple months. But then I'm pre-recording with Skype over my AT&T line, well, right? And so I'm like thinking... What am I going to do?
Well, let's look at that like a little puzzle for a second. And if you think about it, there's things that you can't control, but then you have to start and list out the things you can control.
Let's talk about the things we can.
Okay. So if you were to have a Skype call with a phone, you know, somebody, say, on...
Two landlines.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Or two landlines. Yeah,
it's
okay.
Called two landlines. They're on a landline. I'm on a landline.
With Skype. Is Skype involved?
Right.
Good. All right. So, yeah. So, Skype, you know that somebody is going to maybe have an issue. You can't predict it.
Right.
So, pre-production is a great way to solve this problem, or at least address it as much as you can.
What do you mean by pre-production?
Well, so, if you have a podcast and you have somebody Skyping in, a lot of times what I've found works well is you get in touch with the person ahead of time, and you figure out with them, because they've got a different, you know, microphone on their
right.
computer than, you know, you've never maybe encountered it. And you have to figure out how far they have to be away from that microphone. You know, just look at the things you can control.
Right.
Do your very best with that. But honestly, it's content that is really going to matter or else, you know, NPR wouldn't even be using Skype, right? So,
or you can arrange for some way for that person to have their own recording device outside of their computer.
Oh, and then, exactly. And then edit and mesh.
Yeah.
Well, and it's what I tend to do is I go in with Audacity or whatever, GarageBand, whatever I'm mm-hmm. using, and then amplify everything that's too soft, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But then I'm spending as much time or more time editing that podcast, that recording, than I actually took to record it, right? Because you're trying to get the glicks, the clicks, the glicks, the yep. all those kind of things out of it.
Yep. Yep.
That stuff is just time consuming, kind of no matter what the situation, but yeah, it is obnoxious.
We create methods to deal with those things for people because content is really the reason why we do things more often than not.
So let's talk about somebody coming in for a consultation with you guys. What is that process? You give them a studio tour, you sit down, and what kind of questions do you ask them?
Oh, wow. It's like virtual consultation.
I'm going to get them prepped for when they come in, so that way they can do their homework.
Well,
I know I need to do my homework before I come in because I am definitely coming over.
Well, the first thing we need to let people know is that they're going to, if you go on the website and you check out the website and you,
Night Sound Studio.
Oh, or it's just nightsound.com.
Nightsound.com. Okay.
Yeah. And if you go there, you'll notice the first thing is that we're cartoons.
Okay.
So we want to prepare people for the fact that we're not cartoons in real life. We've been a little concerned.
No Dick Tracy, none of that kind
of
stuff on there. Okay. No Jessica Rabbit showing up.
No,
okay.
Gosh, no, no. That might be inappropriate for the workplace. But
she's got to work somewhere, though.
That's true.
And she's just drawn that way. So anyway, I guess it would be a situation where somebody would come in with a particular set of questions. Maybe they don't know what to ask. And we would show them around
the
facility.
Been there, done that.
Right. Right. So that's okay. I mean.
So we come in, we tell you what we're thinking. We're going to have our own YouTube channel, or we're going to have our own podcast. And we explain that to you, who it's for, what we want to put content-wise, how often, how long, where we want to record it. Do we want to be in your studio? Do we want to do it at home in the closet? Those kind of things.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. And finding out what the means are that somebody...
The budget.
Yeah. Well, just not just the budget, but the amount of time they have every week to do it.
Okay.
The equipment they have, what they're working with, you know.
So if they have a PC or a Mac... Whether they have a laptop or a desktop.
You know, a lot of times I want to, you know, being able to work with Megan, we cover a larger spectrum working as a team. And I know one of the things that I'm, you know, I won't speak for you, Megan, but I know one of the things that I'm always excited about is to find out what they're excited about. If somebody looks at something in the studio, if they see the old piano that we have and they gravitate over to the old piano, we're going to talk about the old piano. I mean, it's just, this is an experience where they can explore. And Night Sound is a kind of a colorful, creative place, you know. That's it's tidy, but it's colorful. It's not a dentist's office, so people will go in there, and there's a little bit of a Willy Wonka vibe thing going on, and people start to get ideas, and people will share their ideas and let me know what they're thinking, and they'll say something like, you know, do you guys think that would be something we could do for, you know, and we'll figure it out. You know,
right.
we'll get a piece of paper out and we'll map out their project. We'll make sure that somebody can start and finish what they're trying to do.
Well, let's give them a flavor with one of the songs.
Some of the music we do.
That you do, and it's called Save Yourself?
Mm-hmm. This is by Little Raven. His real name is Raphael Green, and he is a really talented guy. He's sort of a cross between, Prince and Michael Jackson, Nick Drake, and... All kinds of characters.
So it's Save Yourself.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Focus on Business is underwritten.
You just want to change the world, a broken heart and shame. Defense lies like a flightless bird in the pecking order we come least. There's no time, there's only now. Set the bodhisattva on his cloud. If you want a revolution, evolution's the solution. The dissolution of your time-bound mind. Those halcyon days are far away. tell the tale. Halcyon days are far away. Hey, 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 we will not live to tell the tale. Wahoo, if peace and love are the symbols that you serve, spread the word and ring the bell. Just don't forget to save yourself.
Save Yourself. And who was the performer?
The artist is Little Raven. He's a Nashville artist who started here in the Triangle.
So it's a hometown boy.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an example of someone coming into the studio. They're used to recording, or was that when he was just starting out? What was that process with Little Raven?
Well, with Raphael, who's the main songwriter in Little Raven, we were lucky to meet him before he went to the Berklee School of Music, and when he just had this latent ability to write songs and write lyrics that didn't sound like anybody else's lyrics. And it was a process of him finding out what he wanted to do. And we helped him speed that process along and figure out what his strengths were and what he needed to develop to reach his audience. And he went to the School of Music, came back with a lot of refined skills, and then we've been happy to do, I guess, three, or I guess this might be the fourth project we've done with him.
And so he's recording the entire album?
Mm-hmm.
I guess they're still called albums.
Yeah, sure. Rekkid. I've heard Rekkid. R-E-K-K-I-D. I've heard that one. But
they're not vinyl anymore. But
well, some people still say vinyl. Okay. Yeah, vinyl is actually a very popular medium for independent music.
I'd heard it was coming back, so it's kind of interesting.
It's a legitimizing factor, I think, with independent music. Unfortunately, vinyl production is, just like, you know, Skype is not always dependable, vinyl production is really slow and really expensive. So maybe that will be changing in the coming years with the demand.
They have to learn to do it again.
Well, right? There's only a few companies that can do the mass production, is what I'm told, by the different people we work with who have put vinyl together. It's a different process for mastering. It's a different process for sometimes mixing.
Right. So when people are thinking about their processes, you know, we have acoustic guitars and we have electric guitars. we have analog recording and we have digital recording.
Yeah.
So how, what's the difference? What do they need to know about that? And which do you guys use in the studio? And it does depend on the project.
Well, it definitely depends. It's kind of a combination of whatever is best for someone's sound, I guess, as far as instruments. And, you know, sometimes production is involved, and that, you know, would maybe change the instrumentation that someone originally had in mind.
And so you mean how it was recorded, or if there's one person, he plays the violin, one minute a guitar for the next round or whatever, is it one, and you're meshing that? Is that the production?
Okay. Well, production is kind of more like...
working with the ideas.
Okay.
Yeah. As opposed to like the actual engineering, which is like the getting of the sound. Okay. And, yeah. So if you're asking about like how the recording process actually happens, sometimes it's live and sometimes like live with everyone playing together, and sometimes it's layering one by one like drums.
Okay. And that's engineering it.
That, yeah. I mean, okay.
A lot of times my favorite thing to say about this is that a producer is a diplomat for your ideas, and an audio engineer is a translator for your sound. And what we like to do is set up a situation where we know how to work with people's ideas as engineers or producers.
Okay.
And when that can lead you down a road to either working with analog tape, which we're very fortunate to be one of the only studios in the area that has a 24-track, 2-inch analog tape machine that we keep in great condition. It's, I believe it's from the early 70s.
So I was going to say, is that one of those dinosaur pieces of equipment?
Yeah.
And that's why there's only a few people have it.
Interestingly enough, the audio recording industry is one of the only industries I can think of where older technology is sometimes better.
Right.
Because of the way things were mass produced when these machines were made. Now there couldn't be a company that could afford to mass produce these machines.
Well, I know. I see sometimes on TV when they discover a, you know, some piece of equipment from the 50s, and it has not just the value it had in the 50s, but it's like in the thousands of dollars because it's still the top of the line, even though it's 65 years old.
Well, it seems like magic, but recording audio on iron oxide tape
right.
is still the highest fidelity,
okay.
that you can get. With, you know, that's
so the truest sound.
That's the best that science can do. You know, it's arguable that one thing on digital is going to sound better than something else on analog, and something on analog might sound better than it is on digital. But there's cultural factors involved, which is that most people grew up listening to records that were recorded on analog tape. Most people, even people born in the 90s, grew up listening to analog tape. So it's still a big cultural factor, and only now is digital technology really catching up to that. And we have the option. So there's no one way for anybody. It's always something that you have to find out where somebody's strengths are, how they want to do it, what they want to do. And it's our job as a facility and also professionals to help record people's ideas. It's our job to be as versatile as possible.
So that's the heart you're talking about, right? So if I may want one sound, and that may end up being digital and all of the modern technology, and then I may want to do a project that's old school, right?
Or you can do both. You can do maybe like analog drums and then transfer them over to the computer and like do the rest of the tracking digitally. Or you can record digitally and then do a transfer to analog at the very end to get that kind of warm sound, kind of compression, tape compression.
It's like painting on canvas and deciding what oil, whether or not you want to use acrylic or oil. I mean, it's those kinds of decisions. I'd say it's more art than heart. I think the heart thing that we talk about, it really isn't just something in a paragraph on the website. It's something that we're willing. I think we develop, you know, close professional relationships
right.
with people to be able to, like Raphael's an example, to be able to work on, you know, four different projects with him. We know his ins and outs and his strengths, and we understand how he wants to do something. And we're willing to sit there with somebody, and if getting the right take means talking about why he wrote it, we'll do that. You know, we'll take the time. I'll turn off the clock if it means that as a producer, you know, we get to go where we need to go.
Right.
And it's really about doing our best.
You're actually selling the result, not the process, right?
Well, because I think we're selling both of those things. I think a lot of
because if you're willing to turn off the clock, that means you're not about the hour that you're billing. You're about that result that the client's going to get, right?
So long as everyone's treated fairly, I think that there's a lot of industries that benefit from turning off the clock and from saying,
amen.
from saying, this is what we need to do to get where we want to go, and this is how we want to treat people while we do it.
Because I think from the customer perspective, when you go around to the studios, you're going to have this hour, and then, you know, there's somebody on the other end, and if you don't know what you're doing, the whole hour can be figuring out what you're going to do, and you leave very dissatisfied.
Exactly.
Because you're renting a studio for an hour. You're not getting skill sets and coaching and advice and the production and all of that kind of thing, too.
Something I learned when I was being mentored was that there were businesses that just charged people till they ran out of money.
Right.
And
I run into them all the time.
And, you know, they're not around anymore
in my
line of work.
Because they slaughter the sheep instead of shearing it.
Exactly. And I think a lot of, you know, without editorializing too much, a lot of what you might read about in articles about the death of the music industry is the result of people looking at quarterly earnings and not looking at the, you know, what Megan is saying, the process and the result together. And I think that instead of giving somebody an experience like they've walked into a corporate doctor's office where you have to take off your shoes to go in a building or something like that.
You just described the TSA experience. Sorry. head to editorialize there. It's more of a TSA experience than it is. And the views expressed on the show are not necessarily that of the underwriters, the board, or the station.
Or Night Sound Studios when it comes to just Chris Wimberly talking about, you know, what he thinks about the music industry. Right. We take for granted that that the people that we work with have to enter into an environment that isn't just what we want to work in every day. The people that we work with have to enter an environment that they feel comfortable in immediately. Sometimes you have to change the environment into something entirely new.
Right.
And so Night Sound is that kind of versatile building. Where it's been there for a long time. It's got a lot of good mojo from Chapel Hill music history in there.
Right.
And
you were talking about the process, Megan. I didn't mean to cut you off, but a lot of times people get hung up on the process, especially those of us who don't understand it. And so we're making sure, well, you know, is the board arranged right? You know, am I getting every minute? Because that's what we've been programmed for.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys do the process, but you choose the process based on the result. You're not using the same process for everybody, right?
Yeah, well, everyone's starting at a different place as far as their experience level.
And if you hear the sound effects in the back, there's a lot of ambulances and stuff going by, so I don't know if it's going out over the mics, but this is the quality. It normally happens when I go to record my podcast at the house. The garbage men show up, they start mowing the lawn, somebody blows the leaves, the ambulance goes down the street, and it's in the background.
Yeah, it's sort of the on-location vibe that you get from Carbro. It's like, oh, there goes an ambulance.
Well, and it's, you know, it's funny. I've been listening to some podcasts and stuff, and at the front of every podcast, this one guy I listen to says, okay, you're going to hear an ambulance, you're going to hear a fire truck, and he starts listing of all the things, and he goes, that's just where my office is located, and there is never a day that this doesn't happen. When I start recording, it can be quiet. And it's funny because that's how he starts every podcast. So if you hear the ambulance, you hear the fire truck, unless you hear me yell, everything's fine, just ignore it, right?
Well, you know, that's a great – I'm glad you brought that up because it actually plays into what we're talking about. If somebody – I mean, honestly, that makes that podcast all the more charming, really.
Yeah, because it's authentic. It's like, this is reality. I can never get my office quiet enough. You can hear something going off. And I'm starting to get used to that because, like, the cat will get on the desk and suddenly meow in the middle of a podcast.
Oh, man,
like,
people
I just
love
say
that's
that. The board of directors commenting.
Exactly. People love that because they feel like a personal attachment to where you are. And if you were selling microphones and you needed things to be really quiet, that would be a different story and that would be a different process.
Or you could be telling them why it's so great that it picks up every sound that's around you, right?
Maybe not so great for a podcast, but yeah. But it just depends. I mean, I think that some of the most charming podcasts are things that they might have excellent production values and there might be excellent editing that goes into it and the phrasing and the pacing of what's going on. I mean, we've not only did I work on my old podcast a long time ago, but we've been lucky to work with other with other podcasters. The Blotter has a show here at WCOM, and we've done some work with their upcoming podcasts. And you know, there's all kinds of ways that these different podcasts want to be presented, and I think that's one of the beauties of that medium.
Well, and it's, I know 10 years ago, everyone told you it needed to be dead quiet. You know, all, you know, there were all these things that were technical that, you know, they didn't want to hear you take a breath, right? And so everybody's trying to learn to breathe without breathing, right? And then you look at other people that part of their signature and how they did their radio show was that you heard him take a gasping breath every time he went to say something, right?
And sometimes it's mic technique. Sometimes it's the angle of the microphone. It's how far away it is. It's where somebody puts it in the room. It's whether or not they're speaking from a corner. There's all these little things. And even if somebody is doing this at home, we're happy to say, okay, well, where is it you're doing this? How are we going to help you do this? You know, like, where are you sitting? Maybe move the microphone a little to the left. You know, those kinds of things can really make a big difference.
And I'll tell this on myself because I kept getting these weird reverberations and backfeed and stuff. And so I got the muffle thing at the home and that didn't take it out. And I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, okay, I'm just running through all the things that could possibly lower my 18-foot ceilings just for the effect of it. And so I'm thinking an umbrella. So I went and got an umbrella. What is it? I don't know what kind of bad luck it is to have an umbrella. But I put the umbrella behind me, right? I opened it up and set it there and it took care of it.
Yeah,
so I'm thinking, but I don't want to hold an umbrella for every podcast, right? And so I ordered a baby stroller umbrella and it goes on the microphone, right? Because it goes around a, and so it's over top of it, and so that's helped a lot. But everybody's like, you got a baby stroller umbrella for your recording? I was like, yeah, it kind of lowered the ceiling that way, but it was just something I'm trying to, you know, I was trying to troubleshoot it. I didn't want to spend $300. 20 I would try, right?
See, that's some really smart diffusion and absorption stuff going on right there. So
I was like trying to be creative, but thank God I'm not trying to sing because there is no remastering, no engineering or anything that could possibly fix my singing.
You'd be surprised.
We might try that one of these days. Or maybe I'll be, was it Milli Vanilli that was always lip syncing or whatever back in the golden days? Well, we're going to take a break, talk about our underwriters, and then we'll come back by listening to The Tunnel by Sarah Goss. Focus on Business is underwritten by Focus Resources. Their website is focusresourcesinc.com. That's focusresourcesinc.com. If you would like to become an underwriter for Focus on Business or any of the WCOM FM LP 103.5 programs or the station, visit the WCOMFM.org website for information on underwriting shows, becoming an individual sponsor, becoming a Golden Voice sponsor, or how to volunteer with the station. That's WCOMFM.org. We're on the air because you care and you underwrite our programs.
Attention. Why must they whine so? Someone was talking on the radio. You made a comment and I just said, yeah, I know. But I wasn't really listening to either side. I was in the car, but I wasn't along for the ride. Then you turned on a curve and we approached a tunnel I'd never seen. And the sun beat down on the windshield and I couldn't see a thing, let alone the other side. Then the world went black and I held my breath, that's what I was taught to do. Thank you. was full as we re-entered the world. Need I say my perspective was new? There was a ringing in my ears, all the way to turn to light. I finally noticed all the trees in the pale blue summer sky. Coming towards us was a car on the left. So strange, it was just like mine. You might not believe it, but the driver looked a lot like you. I jumped out of my skin and locked eyes with a girl I once knew. Then you turned on a curve, and we approached a tunnel I'd never seen. And the sun beat down on the windshield and I couldn't see a thing. So why looking for light? Something in the tunnel cleared my mind, alright. She was driving, she was stuck in her head. She didn't notice all the beer they passed. Feeding all the worries in the back of her mind with her time and attention. Why must they wait so long? No one ever talks about what happens within. I picked up on a vibe from the space inside the mountain. Then you turned on a curve, and we approached a tunnel I'd never seen. And the sun beat down on the windshield, and I couldn't see a thing.
That was Sarah Goss, The Tunnel, from The Birds in the Tree.
Mm-hmm.
So she did that in studio, and that's tell right. us a little bit about her.
Oh, okay. I love talking about Sarah Goss. She's one of my favorite songwriters. She was a songwriter that really changed my outlook on where music even comes from. Not to sound too supernatural about it, but she wrote the first six or seven songs she wrote were like songs that, you know, a 20, 30-year songwriting veteran would have written. And they were asymmetrical structures, but they felt and they sounded symmetrical.
Okay, what does that mean, asymmetrical and symmetrical?
You're right. That was a little wordy, wasn't it? Song structures...
You said wordy, not nerdy, but...
No, it's both, probably.
Jargony.
The song structures are... Well, okay, let's talk about this. There's two... sort of defining principles, in my opinion, of what production is.
Okay.
It's psychological or neurological stuff, like symmetry, things that appeal to all different kinds of sensory groups, like symmetry,
so like
threshold of pain. You know.
So like it's like symmetry means when you look at something, the left right side and the right side are identical. There's nothing off.
Or
like the normal bell curve, those kind of things.
Like, you know, like verse, chorus, bridge, kind of like the structure of a song that people are used to, and then like the repetition of the chorus, you know, every so often.
So that's a psychological factor, you know. I mean, if you, for example, we tend to think that people who have one side of their face that looks like the other side of their face are more attractive. So that's just something that's ingrained in us psychologically. You know, I also mentioned like threshold of pain, you know, like there's a certain... decibel level that starts to get painful for people. And those are psychological or neurological factors. The other factors are cultural.
Okay.
So how much bass is in music. It depends on what kind of music you're doing. What instruments you use. It depends on what kind of music you're doing. These are all cultural things.
So if I'm doing calypso and reggae, I'm going to expect one thing. And if I'm doing Mozart, I'm going to expect something else.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then there's multicultural affectations, stuff like Johnny Cash putting horns in Ring of Fire. That was a big step, because suddenly you've got a Latin influence in a country song, and you know, we don't think twice about it now when we hear that song.
Or like that, Elvis's style of putting what was traditionally, as they called it, black music.
It was absolutely black music. Right. Yeah, and
into, you know, and that was, he blended that in his gospel. He blended that in his rock. Everything he did, mm-hmm, took his influences in.
Right. So there's a palette of colors, mm-hmm, and there's a spectrum of sounds and choices that either fall into the psychological category or the cultural category. This doesn't just apply to music. This also applies to voiceover audio. This applies to, it doesn't have to have lyrics in it. It doesn't have to, it can be a spoken voice. It can be what voice you use to present a certain
You can
have someone with a certain accent present something, to a culture that is not even the culture that has that accent.
Well, and for decades, if not centuries, from the time we did started having radio and TV broadcasts of news and things like that, the objective was to be without an accent, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so everybody was taught to get rid of, and then like actors and stuff do that. You know, Fran Drescher is like the classic example of what she sounds like with her normal accent, which is what she sounded like on The Nanny, uh-huh, versus, mm-hmm, when she does another part and she can get rid of that accent. Everyone was told to get rid of that accent. That richness of our culture was getting erased from our communication styles.
Right, right. Well, sometimes, though, you want the British guy to sell the fancy thing.
Right.
You know? And so when we, when we have to do a voiceover project and we help somebody select their voiceover talent, we look for something that's going to be both psychologically and culturally relevant to whatever it is that someone is trying to get across.
Yeah, Outback Steakhouse is not going to use a Georgia Peach accent. They need an Aussie accent. They're an Aussie-themed restaurant, right?
Unless they're in Georgia.
I don't know about that. It's like a Bloomin' Onion just does not sound the same in a deep Southern accent.
I think it would sound really
It would
beautiful.
Get your attention. I'm not saying it wouldn't be beautiful, but it's not culturally their brand, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. I mean, I think sometimes people would be like, thinking it's more American to hear somebody from Atlanta say "Bloomin' Onion," you know, it's
like, or the British guy say it with that, you know, you can come and maybe it was a higher brow Bloomin' Onion,
right,
if it was
if
the
it's
accent.
A really colonial Bloomin' Onion.
So whenever we're deciding to represent that cultural aspect of us,
sure,
when we come in to do our recordings or when we're doing our music and choosing those kind of things, what's the process for helping guide us to find, for want of a better term, that voice or that cultural aspect of what we're doing?
Let's start with who someone is. Like, who are you? Who are you, and what do you want to say, and why do you want to say it? Like, stuff we talked about with that consultation stuff. Like, you know, some things aren't going to make so much sense, but maybe you really like the sound of something. Maybe that something really appeals to you, and you want that same thing to appeal to other people. Sometimes production values are the most important part of something. It's not about sound quality. It's not about something. It's not about something that has to do with the gear that you would use or where you put the gear. But you can frame things. You can frame the right pictures the right way, with the right ideas, with the right identities. And most of the time, people come in from what they know, and who they are is the best way to present themselves.
It makes that authentic than whatever
they're doing. Yeah, and you know, I mean, a lot of people forget that when you're trying to connect to an audience, or when you're trying to disseminate information to somebody, and you're targeting somebody, sometimes people forget that it's about who you are and what you want to do, and not what you want to get out of it.
That it's a person on the other side listening to what you're doing, and they're, mm-hmm, not perfect either.
Right, so and it's hard to have glitches, that. Right? It's hard to have that objectivity. It's hard to put yourself in somebody else's shoes. And sometimes you got to triangulate that with more than one person. Sometimes you have to, you know, you have to find out who your audience is, even after you've been doing something for a while. Sometimes you're surprised about who's listening, And knowing those things and being able to connect with your audience, it creates something that's greater than the sum of its parts.
And so it's better to get out to the audience rather than seek perfection.
Right. A lot of times people think, well, you know, I heard so-and-so had this piece of gear, and I heard they did this in this location. Or
gear envy.
They did this in a log cabin, or they did this in New York City. Or,
right.
You know, there's different ideas that people get in their head. They see somebody succeed, and then they say, oh, that thing that they did, that must be what I need to do too. And I think there's no bigger mistake in all of production than to say, oh, they did that, I'll do that too.
The Me Too thing. That's what I say in business. Mm-hmm. You see people, so many businesses will do what the competitor did to stand out.
Right.
Well, they stood out because they weren't doing what the competitors yes. did. Right. They do the Yellow Page or the Me Too is what I call it.
Unless it becomes a cultural standard, you know, there's no reason to sort of go to the well too many times on that situation. And a lot of times, that's what working with good producers and good engineers can be. It can be that objectivity, that ability to step back and say, how does this sound from someone else's perspective? And audio is always going to be one of the most important ways to deliver a message. As long as we care about words, we're going to care about audio.
Well, and I think that's something that we in the States frequently forget, because we're used to having a television and we have radio and we have all of these different things. In some countries, audio is all they have. And so when we're doing an education program, they may have a radio, they may have a smartphone, oddly enough, but what they're going to get is only the audio message. And so if we're relying too much on pictures because we're doing video or those kind of things, we forget the power of people listening on their iPod or their tablet or in their car and making sure that we're putting that passion or that content and that delivery mechanism together correctly.
Absolutely agreed. Yeah. And that's a good segue for me to do something that Megan absolutely hates, and that's brag about Megan.
Oh no.
Megan is the greatest engineer I have ever worked with, hands down. I think that one of the luckiest things about my career is not only that I get to do what I love, but I get to work with somebody that's as good as Megan. We were talking about how Sarah Goss is just out of the gate. How the heck is she that good?
Prodigy.
Where did she get that from? And she just sort of, you know, asks the universe and the song comes to her. Well, Megan is sort of the engineering equivalent of that same sort of talent. She's got amazing ears, and it makes the job a lot more fun to work with somebody that can hear things and make decisions as well as Megan can.
We are a great team.
Thank you. I agree. I think that we're a great production team.
So what is it and what do you love about working with the clients and doing these projects, Megan?
I love that, I mean, despite the fact that there's all these like technical aspects to what I'm doing, I love that it's like a collaboration. You know, when someone tells you their ideas and their vision for their sound, it's still like there's still some like creative ideas that I can put into creating what they're looking for. There's not really ever like one way to do something. And I also really enjoy seeing people come into the studio and not really knowing what tools they're using or how to use them, and slowly kind of gaining an understanding of what they're doing and how they can use that, and then telling me, okay, I want to use that thing and do this way. Or, you know, instead of saying, well, you know what you're doing, so you know, just, you know, dial it in and do what you need to do. But it becomes like more and more collaborative as they understand how to use the
things. Your gifts that God gave you, and they're are maximizing the gifts that God gave them.
Yeah.
Yep, that's what good business is about. We're on a business podcast, and we're talking about how people use their strengths to work together.
Well, and that's what it is, because no one can be perfect at everything. I mean, I'm a gadget person. I love all my techie things. And, you know, I want to think I'm going to buy one more gadget, and it's just going to be the thing that solves the problem and saves me time and whatever.
Yeah.
And that's why I have, like, 7 computers and all these other things. So it's like, we have to get back to realizing it's how we use the stuff more so a lot of times than what stuff, what gear we and gadgets
exactly.
we have to use.
I agree with that.
And you're saying that's Megan's skill set is her, she's a maestro at doing the engineering and hearing the music or hearing what we're doing.
I think that Megan working on someone's music is like watching somebody's subconscious work, in my opinion, because there's all kinds of processes and associations going on in that room. And sometimes, you know, you'll say something, you don't know why you said it. And I think Megan is the kind of person that facilitates that kind of connection between the artist and their idea and the client and their end result. And that's something that a good engineer should do for somebody.
Well, and it's, you know, what we're saying is like in business, someone goes in and the ideal business is somebody that's great administration. They have a great salesperson. They have the great technical people. And as one, they come together to be the heart, the soul, the legs, the arms, the eyes, the ears, all of that mm-hmm. kind of stuff of mm-hmm. the business. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're trying to do on every project. But we can't understand all the technical stuff. And reaching out to, like, you guys at Night Sound Studios and other experts to help us figure it out saves us time, money, frustration, stress.
Well,
I mean, it's just all those kind of things.
Certainly not to disagree with you, Leah, but I think that people can understand. I think people get mired in the details. And one of the most personable and, you know, naturally human things to do is to look too far into the details or ignore the details. And those are just normal things. And I think people, if they understand the big picture of the gear they're using, the details of the gear really aren't going to matter. And sometimes you need someone like Megan to help control the details so you can keep your eye on the
big picture. Yeah, I want to look at the forest. I don't want to look at every branch, twig, tree, the texture, the bark, and all those kind of things.
And some people love details, and we want to allow them that experience too. So I think that people understanding the palette of colors that they have to work with, it can help them make the picture that they want to make.
But I think as businesses, we all frequently focus on the things we love to do. And so mm-hmm. we can get caught up in the gadgets, or we can get caught up on the doing the radio show and not do our accounting or whatever those kind of things are. But we also get caught up as business owners in thinking, well, we have to do it all. Or if our budget is really tight, there's no one out there that's going to do it for that tight of a budget.
Right.
It's hard to hand things over to other people when you're so close to them.
And the more stressed you get, the more need there seems to be for control. And it's saying, okay, who do I look around? It's like, I want to do this, and I'm not able to solve whatever the weird acoustics are in my house or the 10 million electrical buzzing things that go on in the house. Or maybe you just need to unplug and go to a studio to do something for a few times and learn and find your voice and do the processes that you guys are talking about and then figure out, okay, I now know what my voice is and how I want it to sound,
sure,
what my background music is, all of those kind of things. And then you can also help them answer the question is like, okay, now that you have that voice, how do you do it on the road, or how do you do it at home or wherever it is you want to do it?
Sure. Understanding mm-hmm. what it is about somebody that makes them is part of production. And
because I think we often don't see ourselves as accurately because it
is. Definitely.
We'll focus on the flaws, right? Mm-hmm. And so we get uncomfortable when someone sings our praises because we know what we focus on and think, well, I can't do this or those kind of things. And so by taking it out of our own control to some extent and saying, okay, you're an expert. You can tell me how I sound on the microphone. Do I need to learn to breathe differently or do my voice differently or lose the southern accent or whatever it is, right? Mm-hmm. And getting that objectivity and that cooperation, collaboration type of thing going can lift what we're doing from the beginning of the project rather than stumbling onto it 2 or 3 years later.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So where are you located? And give them your website again.
The website is nightsound.com, nightsound.com. Not night like medieval knight. We have a lot of people.
No K in that.
People thinking there's a K. There's no K. It's night like nighttime. Nightsoundstudios.com. Nightsound.com. Pretty soon we're going to link to nightsoundstudios.com too.
But okay.
Just go to nightsound.com for that. And we're located in downtown Carrboro. We're part of a music complex. It includes the Music Loft and Carrboro Creative, where they teach music lessons. So it's a really unique set of neighbors that we get to work with there.
And I will vouch that when you go to their website, they are cartoons, but in real life, I'm looking at real people with real talent and a real message. And
we're a little cartoonish. I mean, I'm going to be honest.
That's true.
And a heart for making sure that we sound the best when we're doing our projects. And I want to thank you guys for being on the show. Let's play one more piece of music. Yeah. How about Wolves in the Forest? Tell us a little bit about that artist.
Sure. This is actually this is interesting. Taylor Herbert is a doctor at Duke University, and he's also one of the people that helped design the patch bay system at Night Sound. He's a friend of mine and really one of the smartest guys I know. And he, I guess, wrote a song about I think people being afraid of what they can do and being afraid of themselves, and that's what Wolves in the Forest is about. And he actually recorded a lot of this by himself at Night Sound and with me and a bunch of other artists that are in the area. So it's a pretty fun song.
Well, that's actually great that I chose that one to end on.
And sure.
Until next week, everyone, you're listening to Focus on Business on WCOM FM LP 103.5 Chapel Hill and Carrboro. And until next time, stay focused on the important things.
Thank you, Leah.
It's been 1,014 days since it broke your heart, since panic overtook you and left you in the dark. Your books and education didn't help you to fight when dread crept in your bedroom and turned out the light. And there's wolves in the forest, serpents in the deep, and noises in the attic. It's getting hard to sleep. The grass, it grows deep up to the wheels of your car. You look outside your window and don't know who you are. Your hostage, you met with its demands. I'm standing on your front porch with flowers in my hands. You're peering through the curtains, will you let me in? There's a tiger in your lifeboat, baby, but you're afraid to swim. And there's wolves in the forest, there's serpents in the deep, and noises in the attic. It's getting hard to sleep. And grass, it grows deep up to the wheels of your car. You look outside your window, don't know who you are. Did you sweep away all those years, only to discover that all those childhood fears never went away? Does it break your heart to know you're not so clever?